Go ahead and open your Bibles to Matthew chapter 11. Matthew chapter 11. You know, imagine receiving an invitation to meet the person that you admire most. A person that you might say has maybe shaped your life in some particular way. Maybe some person that you've never met, but yet you admire things they've done, things they've said, and you've been invited to meet them. I think there'd be certain things that would be true in that case. I think one, you would be very honored to have that opportunity to meet someone that you hold in such high regard. I think you would probably be overjoyed at the opportunity to speak to such a person. I think you would readily jump at the opportunity. You know, sometimes when you have those opportunities, you know they may never come again, so you would probably jump at that. You would probably tell everybody about your excitement. You know, guess who I'm getting to go see? And then you would probably then have to kind of fill them in, right, as to why you admire this person, why you think this person is so wonderful, why you're so excited to be able to go and to see them. You know, you would also, I think, prepare. Maybe you'd buy some new clothes if it's going to be some kind of dress-up event. You know, if they're cowboys, maybe you go buy you some boots. I don't know. You know, kind of fit it to the situation, I guess. But you might buy something new to wear. You might buy something that would be helpful. You might even, you know, feel the need to buy a gift for that individual. You would maybe learn some things. You know, if the person is an expert in a certain area or a person that, you know, you admire them because they've championed a particular cause, you may learn something about that cause so that when you meet them face to face, you can talk intelligently about what they are very focused on. So you may try to learn some things. But I think that at the end of the day, when we take all those together and we roll them all up in a ball, I think we would want to make a good impression. A good impression on the person that we admire. I believe that we have received such an invitation that is worthy of all those things, worthy of our admiration. And he should be the most admired person in our lives, really, at the end of the day. Matthew chapter 11, in verse 28, Jesus says, "Come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me. For I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest unto your souls," or for your souls. "For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light." Isn't that awesome? I mean, when you read that and you understand that Jesus Christ is not just talking to the people that day, but he's talking to you, and he's talking to me, don't you find that awesome that he says to you, "Come to me. Come to me and let me help your life," to be invited to be with Jesus? You know, preachers have often called this the great invitation of the Lord, and I guess that it is fitting to be called that. You know, this call by Jesus is the heart of the gospel. It's at the heart of it. Because the greatest good news that there is, when we think about this idea, this word gospel, which means good news, but the greatest good news is that I can come to Jesus. That he does want me to come to him. That he does want my life, that he does want to have a relationship with me. There is no better news than that for sinful, fallen individuals. Let's take note of some things in this invitation very quickly this evening. First, it is for everyone. Notice that he says, "Come to me, all." You know, all that are weary and heavy laden. How sweet it is that Christ seeks every person to come to him. It doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter how you lived. It doesn't matter what sins you committed or how many sins you have committed. Jesus still says this to you. You know, there are people out there that believe that they have done things and they have sinned in ways that God could never forgive, and they couldn't be more wrong. Because Christ calls everyone to come to him. If Adolf Hitler, Joseph Stalin, had repented and chosen to turn their life to Christ, he would have forgiven them. He will forgive you and he will forgive me, because that is the Lord, the loving Lord that he is. John chapter 3 and verse 16, we see this universal call to all people. When God, for God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son, right? The whole world. He loved the world. It was an action done not just for the world that existed at the time that Jesus Christ came, but God so loved the world that is, was, and will be. God living in the eternal present, looking at it all, throughout all time, loved that world, the whole of existence. But you come down, and not only does He say He loved the world, but it is for everybody, whosoever. That is a universal term. Anybody that does it, anybody that believes, should not perish but have everlasting life. John 3:16. Titus chapter 2 and verse 11, Paul tells Titus that the grace of God has appeared to all men. Every person, everyone has the opportunity to benefit from the grace of Jesus Christ, from what He has done for us. Grace calls us to Jesus Christ. You know, this invitation is the heart as well of the Great Commission for this very reason. To go into all the world, preach the gospel to just the people we like. Isn't that what it says? To just the people like us? To just the people of the same socioeconomic group that we may exist in? Is that what it says? No. Go and preach the gospel to the whole world. Make disciples of all nations, as Matthew 28 says. Baptizing them. It is a universal call to come to Christ. And may we be people that do that. Because Christ is still calling people. He's still saying, come to me. But He's doing that through you and me. In what we say. And how we teach. Romans chapter 10 makes it very clear. How will they hear unless somebody teaches them? Unless someone preaches them? Unless someone's sent? How beautiful are the feet of those that bring the good tidings of Christ. Second, in this text, this invitation is for those that need help. It is for people that are weary from false religion. It is for people that are weary from what sin and ignorance does to a person's life. Now, every one of us have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God, and that sin in our lives that we have committed, those things that we have done, those mistakes that we have made, have had an impact on our lives, and it's not a positive one. We have been wearied by those things, and yet Christ calls for us. It is for people who need relief, people who need mercy, people who need compassion. You know, I think about when we look at Jesus Christ's ministry, and He is out there and there are people that are physically sick. And they are doing everything they can to get to Jesus. They might have the opportunity for Jesus, who had shown and demonstrated in no uncertain terms that He could heal the sick. Remember the woman that had the hemorrhage of blood? And she said to herself, if only I can just touch His garment, right? Showing how difficult it was to just get close to Jesus in those days, with everybody trying to do that. Just get close enough to reach out and maybe just touch Him. I'll be healed. You know, people understood they had an incredible need. The problem is sometimes the sickness of sin, we ignore the symptoms, don't we? We ignore what it's doing to our lives, and we never realize that I need to just do everything I can to just reach out and touch Christ, so that He can heal me. I do everything I can to come to Him to find those things that I need. You know, because people need things such as relief and mercy and compassion, and those things are rare in our world. And because they need those things and cannot find them, they are heavy laden. They are weighed down by the hurts and the hardships and the selfishness of this world. You do not have to live very long to either experience this or to be around someone that is experiencing it. To see someone heavy laden with what this world puts upon them. Yet Jesus says, I want those kind of people to come to me. I want to help them. Jesus calls for such people. Unlike the world, though, Jesus gives rest. And this rest comes from forgiveness and strength received in faith. Faith that gives us a peace because we understand that God is there. I can't imagine living this life and thinking that it all just lies on me. And that whether I survive in this world or not has only to do with me and my skills and my abilities. That would be a terrible way to live. To not have the faith in God that He's there. Because I can't plan 2 seconds from now. I could drop, and preachers have dropped in the pulpit. I've known some that have. They died right there preaching. I can't promise that I'm even going to see the invitation song. How in the world am I going to appropriately plan my life? I got to trust in God to see me to tomorrow. And to give me the strength to live that day as well. Jesus made it very clear about that, didn't He? That today has enough trouble of its own. Don't start worrying about tomorrow. Deal with this moment, this time. Christianity truly is present tense. You know, the world can only guide from human knowledge, and such never leads to rest because it never leads to hope. Jeremiah made it very clear that it's not within our abilities to guide our own steps. You know, Jesus is also, unlike the world, Jesus is gentle. He teaches with love and compassion. And the world, though, tends to berate those that they disagree with. Do y'all ever take opportunity, say, if you're looking at the news online, do you ever take opportunity to look at the comment sections? And people, I think we talked about this on Wednesday night, but you look in those comment sections, and what happens when one person disagrees with another person? You know, it might start off with, this is what I think, and this person, I don't think that. In the minute that's established, that there's two sides, it goes from a reasonable, or it may have never been reasonable, sometimes it's not, but it goes from, you know, something that might be civil to a bunch of name calling, doesn't it? Because the world berates those that do not agree with them. Christians certainly understand this. There's a history of that in the world toward those that believe and toward anyone that disagrees with them and whatever it is that they may hold to. But yet when we look at Jesus, He is gentle. He feeds people that will reject Him the next day. And don't think for one moment that Jesus Christ didn't know they were going to do that. Because their hearts were no different the day He fed them than they were the day they walked away from Him the next day. They were just there, and Jesus knew the shallowness of why they were there, and yet He still felt compassion on them. He still was gentle toward them, even though He knew the next day they would say, these are hard things, and walk away and never return. And yet He still showed them a kindness. John chapter 8, the woman caught in the very act of adultery. Certainly a woman that Jesus doesn't agree with, don't you think? And yet, He shows her kindness and gives her a loving admonition, does He not? Sometimes people forget there's a loving admonition there, right? They say, well, He didn't do anything with the woman caught in adultery. Well, it wasn't His place. He wasn't a judge. He couldn't sentence her to be stoned. That would be a sin. That's the devil working there. But He did give her an admonition. Go and sin no more. Stop what you're doing. Live right, loving, gentle. You even see Him on the cross after having been beaten, going through kangaroo courts, nailed to a cross, hanging there, continuously saying, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. Gentle. Are we those kind of people? That's what Jesus is. He says, I'm gentle. Come to me. The person that you have the least to be fearful of, or the least chance of receiving any harm from, is the faithful Christian. That person will always be kind and gentle, because that's how their Lord is. But also, unlike the world, Jesus is humble. In humility, there just simply that He submits Himself to another. You know, the world tends to look out for itself, doesn't it? I mean, they're looking out for number one, and they will walk over whoever or whatever gets in their way in order to have what they want oftentimes. They will be in a hurry, and they will basically run you over in Walmart parking lot, won't they? The world often is very geared toward themselves, but Jesus says, I'm humble. I'll put myself or put you before me. You know, when we look at Him in the Garden of Gethsemane, we see that this aspect of humility applies in regard to his relationship with God the Father. Not my will, but thy will be done. That is Jesus being humble. But he's also humble toward us. He gives preference to you and me. Philippians chapter 2. When Paul says, let this attitude be in you that was also in Christ Jesus, who though he existed in the form of God, did not consider equality with God a thing to be grasped, but came and lived as a man, right? And died. Died for who? See, he submitted himself to you and me. Left the glories of heaven, laid aside divine traits so that he could come and serve you and me. He washed those feet to make a point, didn't he, in John chapter 13? About humility and the willingness to set self aside for others. You know, Jesus' purpose when he came to this earth and in his ministry is very clear, and there's no ambiguity to it. In Luke chapter 19 and verse 10, he said, the Son of Man has come to seek and to save that which is lost. That's why he came. He came to seek and to save that which is lost. He did that through his teaching, and he did that through his death, burial, and resurrection. That was his purpose. And that should be our purpose. Third, this is an invitation, though, while it is for those in need, and while Jesus desires for all to come, it is an invitation that requires a response. You know, we get those invitations in the mail, don't we? As those RSVP down there where they want you to tell them that you're coming. You know, you're going to have to do something. And we make choices no matter what. We get those invitations, we immediately make a choice whether we're going to go or not go, right? Now, whether you RSVP, that... You know, we kind of find out in sign-up lists at church, if you're in charge of anything at church and you kind of sign up, you're going to find out that some people don't RSVP very often. But, you know, we make a choice whether we're going to come or whether we're not. And so this particular invitation, this request by Jesus, it's actually not a request, it's a command, but it requires a response. The Greek word here for come denotes a command. Jesus is literally saying in this, do it. Come. It's not, you know, come if it's convenient, come if you'd like. And Jesus is saying, you come. If you want to be faithful to me, you come to me right now. You know, Jesus is saying for that we should not just sit there and complain about our weariness, that we shouldn't just sit there and complain about the mess that our life is in. We need to do something about it. I'm sure that all of us have known at some point in our lives people who just like to complain. Yeah. Anybody not known that kind of person? We've all known that person, haven't we? They just like to complain. I don't know, they get some kind of enjoyment out of it. I don't know why you get enjoyment out of complaining. But they get some kind of enjoyment out. They're not even really interested. If you try to tell them how to help their complaint, they're not even interested in that. Don't tell me how to fix it. I like complaining about it. Right? They don't want to fix it. They never do anything to fix it. And, that's hard, I guess, for a lot of people to understand. I know it's hard for me to understand, but there are people like that. But Jesus is telling people, come to me. I can help you with these things that are destroying your life, that are making your life difficult, or making you heavy laden. And there are some people out there that are going to continue to complain about their heavy laden life and never come to the one that can fix it, right? But we need to come to him if we want it fixed. You must take the yoke of Jesus upon you and learn of him. You know, John tells us in 1 John 5 that God's commands are not burdensome. Christianity is doable. And it's certainly a much better life than a life without Christ. And so the yoke of Jesus is much better. It's much lighter, as he says, than the yoke that the world and that sin will place upon us. Lives that come to Jesus want to be as well like the person that they admire. You know, if you admire a person, you're going to take some of their traits. Some of the things that you think are great, you want to put those things in your life. You want to implement that. I will tell you that as a preacher, and I've talked to other preachers and they say similar things, that there are preachers that I really like and that I have heard over the years, and I've tried to put some of the characteristics I liked in those men into either my ministry in general or into my preaching. And, because I admire the way they do something particularly well. And I want to have that, in, you know, and be able to have people benefit from that for me as well. But, you know, when we think about the disciple aspect, you know, make disciples of all nations, or that Jesus would call men to follow Him, to be His disciples, to be a disciple. And if you are a Christian today, you are a disciple of Christ. To be a disciple is to want to be just like the one you're following. To be identical to Him in every way. That's what they sought in the days of Jesus Christ. That's what a disciple did. So we need to take His yoke. We need to respond to the invitation. You know, when we hear Jesus Christ saying this, and we understand that there's a needed response, there's some texts that come to mind. Revelation chapter 3 and verse 20, where Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock, and if anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and will dine with him, and he with me." Now, somebody can come knock at your door, but until you come and unlock it and open it, they're not going to get to come in, are they? You're going to have to do something with the knocking. Now, you don't have to do anything, and then they can't come in, right? Jesus knocks at the door of your life. Come to me. Will we open it? We have to make that choice. There, it requires a response. Even in John chapter 3 and verse 16, as we talked about a few moments ago, whosoever believeth, right? There's a condition, for should not perish. And the condition is to believe, to give their lives to Jesus Christ. There is a response required in that particular case. John chapter 14 and verse 15, Jesus says, "If you love me, you will keep my commandments." You know, if I say I love Jesus, there's a response that's got to come from that love. There's something I have to do. Love is not just words. Love is action. Love is something we do. Love is something we express in our actions. Just like faith is something we express. Or it's dead, as James says. And what is the expression of love to Jesus Christ? To keep my commandments. There's a response to the invitation of Jesus Christ. You must choose today to act, to respond to the invitation of Jesus. If you want rest, come to Jesus. If you want help, come to Jesus. If you want forgiveness, come to Jesus. If you want to be like Christ, come to Jesus. If you love Jesus tonight, come to Him. Take His yoke. Learn of Him. And give your life wholly to Him. Jesus says, come. What do you say? Better yet, what do you do? Do you come to Him? Do you obey Him? Do you take His yoke and let Him give you rest? Hope and pray that you do. If you're not a child of God, we hope and pray that you'll make the decision to become one. To make Jesus Christ your Lord, to become a disciple of Jesus Christ. If you are a child of God, and maybe you've forgotten that Jesus Christ is your focal point, that Jesus Christ is who you need to be going to on a continuous basis, but you've been going here, you've been going there. I read a story about a man that was driving his brand new Jaguar. I'm from Mississippi, so I can't say it that other fancy way. Jaguar. You know, just let me say Jaguar. Bobby says, I understand. he's not even expecting it. He's driving his brand new, really expensive Jaguar down this street, and he was going really fast. He didn't care about anybody else or what was in their way or anything, but he did see that he saw this kid for just a moment, so he did slow down just a little bit in case the kid darted out into the road, but he didn't see the kid come out, but he went just a little bit past where the kid was, and a brick hit the side of his brand new Jaguar. Boy, he slammed on those brakes. Slid that car, turned around, went back, found that kid standing there on the side of the street. There was a big old dent in the side of his door. And he began to tear into that little kid. He said, "How dare you throw a brick at my car? This is an expensive car. You owe me a lot of money. You're going to have to pay." "What got into you?" He said, "Sir, I didn't want to tear up your car." And tears started streaming down his face. He said, "But my little brother, his wheelchair tipped over and he fell out into the gutter area of the street." And he said, "I can't get him out. And he said, nobody will stop and help me. And the only way I could get your attention, because you were going by so fast, was to throw a brick at your car and hopefully you would come back and help me. So he went and he helped that little boy get his brother out of the gutter and put him back into his wheelchair. And he walked, watched him as he walked off with the wheelchair. And that man said he never fixed that door. Because he wanted, every time he saw his fancy Jaguar, he wanted to be reminded to never be going through life so fast that you don't see the people that have need. If you have a need this evening, isn't it wonderful to know that the Christ of the universe is not too busy to call to you and to invite you to Him? Won't you come as we stand and as we sing? Mm-mm.